You're listening to the Prepper Recon Podcast. For questions, comments, and podcast archives, go to PrepperRecon.com.
Hey, Preppers and Patriots. I hope you're having a wonderful spring. Things are starting to get hot here on my side of the mountain, but unlike Florida, the mornings and evenings stay cool pretty much year-round, so I can always get an early start on my outdoor work and then focus on writing books and office work and that kind of thing once the sun starts heating up. I'd said that I'd try to put out a show once a month, but I didn't really say when the show would come out. I think I'm going to try to get it out the first week of every month. I had a lot of response to last month's call for show topics and book ideas. You guys are really, really great. You just you gave me so much great feedback, and I really want to thank everybody that sent me emails or posted on Facebook or in the comments section on Prepper Recon. Thank you all so much for taking the time to respond. And then I was just completely overwhelmed by all the positive response from listeners who expressed how happy they were that the show was coming back. You know, it really was a hectic period since we made the big move, and I really did need that break. But I'm glad to be back, and feels good to be back, and missed you guys, and happy to be doing the show again. For those of you who don't follow me on Facebook but would like to, I've got two pages. One of the pages is the author Mark Goodwin page, and that's typically more the place where I post books and things. When I come out with a new release, I'll usually post it on Prepper Recon and Mark Goodwin. And then I also have the Prepper Recon podcast page. So going forward, I'll probably only post info related to the show on the Prepper Recon podcast page. But to be super honest, I'm not very active on Facebook. Actually, I guess I'm kind of surprised that I haven't been banned for my extremist right-wing views yet. But, you know, I think that's part of the reason I don't really invest much time on the platform, because I know that day's coming. So this month's question comes from Stephen C. Stephen C. won a code for a free audiobook from audible.com because I used his question for this month's show topic. So make sure you email your questions for next month's show to prepperrecon@gmail.com, and you could be next month's winner. Stephen writes, "Hey, Mark, I would love to hear a brief update on the changes and preps you make to your new bug out location. Thank you, Stephen." So thank you so much for your interest in that, Stephen. I guess I chose this question partially because I have learned a lot, and it's been a very exciting period, and I really do want to share it with you guys. But I also want to let you guys know that, you know, I haven't just been slacking off. I didn't just quit the show because I wanted to watch more TV. I really have been busy. And I guess I could probably fill up several shows answering that question, but I'll just kind of brush over the highlights. And maybe you guys can learn a little bit about some of the things that I've learned. The property that we purchased had been neglected for years. It had really, really good bones, but just a lot of the upkeep stuff hadn't been done. Obviously, one of the most important factors for us when we were looking for a property was privacy and seclusion. And the only way to get that is to be way back off of the main road. And, of course, that comes at a price. Our driveway is roughly a quarter mile long, which means we've got a lot of road maintenance to do just to be able to get in and out of the property. So when we bought the property, the road was pretty washed out. It needed gravel. All the culverts that went from one side of the mountain to go under the driveway to keep it from washing all the gravel down to the creek, they were all stopped up. So that was our first order of business because, you know, if you can't get in and out, then it's not really a very livable property. So we had to have the ditches and the culverts excavated, and we had to have gravel brought in. And then the last stretch of driveway up to the house where we live is very steep, and we had to have about 350 feet of that paved. Otherwise, it was just going to be an endless game of bringing in more gravel and watching it wash down to the creek every time a heavy rain came. And also, every time a delivery truck came in, they would rut it out. I was constantly grading it and just trying to fight a losing battle with that. So we bit the bullet and got it paved, and very, very happy about that. And it's much, much more easy to navigate. A paved road, if it gets iced over, is probably not, it's probably easier to get up and down a steep gravel road if there's ice, because the ice doesn't really get so slick on gravel like it does on a paved road. But if we were in that kind of a instance, then we would just park at the bottom of the road and walk up from there. And we have more than 3 days worth of food at the main house, so and firewood and all of that kind of thing stocked, so there's never a time that we would need the supplies from the bottom of the hill and couldn't wait for the ice to melt off. Next was the older house on the property that I use as my office. It was built by the previous owner in 1964. Very, very solid construction. He did a really, really good job. Obviously, when you build things yourself, you don't always do things up to code. And in 1964, I'm sure codes were very, very different than they are now. But it's a well-built house. But no renovations had ever been done on this house. And it needed painting, inside painting, outside painting. The porch and deck needed staining. Some of the windows needed replacing. They had unit ACs that were sort of semi-permanently installed, and there was just no way to get them out and still have the windows intact. The bathroom had a pink tub. You know, I can handle some minor cosmetic imperfections, but I draw the line at a pink tub. So, you know, in for a penny, in for a pound. So we remodeled the entire bathroom. The house had no other heat other than the fireplace, so I had to put in a central heating and cooling system. The ceiling had those square stick-on acoustic tiles, which were arguably worse than the pink bathtub. So we put in pine tongue and groove ceilings throughout. The house had original oak floors, which were very, very nice. So I ran pine baseboards around the base of the walls, and pine boards for door and window casings, as well as ceiling borders. And it gives the interior of the cabin a nice sort of cabin woodsy feel. And I know what you're thinking about now. Sounds expensive and has nothing to do with prepping. Yes and no. First off, it's an investment. Real estate has proved to be one of the better hedges against inflation, as it's a collection of various commodities as well as a potential income-producing asset. If we ever decide to sell or rent the small cabin, we should be able to get our money back. And, 2009 taught us that nothing's guaranteed, but over the decades, real estate has proved to be about as safe as anything else. Secondly, it's the place I go to create. So while I may write about dystopic rat holes, I don't really want to work out of one. And thirdly, my office cabin is going to be housing for other people in my mutual assistance group if the worst ever happens. And for those of you who have read all of my books, particularly the Seven Cows series, and have been longtime listeners of the show, you can probably guess who I'm talking about, who would be coming up here to live there. So if I'm asking another family to relocate to my property, it needs to be a place where they'd be comfortable living, to sort of make the best of the apocalypse there. So you can see that in addition to the big move from Florida and keeping up with an adventurous toddler, I've pretty much had my hands full. With those projects out of the way, I've recently been able to start thinking about food production. I put in some pear trees, blueberry bushes, apple trees, raspberry bushes, and even though we have a lot of blackberry bushes growing wild on the property, I also bought some domestic blackberry bushes, and a few things affected my decision to do that. First, most of the wild blackberry bushes on the property are in shaded areas, which means they're not going to produce as much fruit as if they're in the sun. Then many of them are entangled with other species of briars and brambles, and it seems like anything with a thorn likes to grow around other thorny and prickly plants. My property has tons of holly trees, which are nice because they stay green all year, and like the pines and the cedars, they help to break up the foreboding gray landscape that we have here in the winter. But I've never seen a holly that didn't have some other type of briar in the very near vicinity. And at some point, I may attempt to try to cut back some of the wild blackberries and try transplanting them in areas that would be more accessible with less briars and brambles around and also more sun. Also, I'm trying to propagate some of the blueberries from cuttings. I just cut a couple of twigs from each plant, trimmed off all the blooms, and thinned off the excess leaves, leaving just a few leaves on each of the twigs, and then dipped the base of the twigs in root tone. Root tone's an agent which helps a cutting develop roots. You can buy it on Amazon. It's not very expensive. Then I stuck two twigs in each container of potting soil, and I've been keeping it very, very wet. I keep the cuttings in a shaded area and water them every day that it doesn't rain. So far, they seem to be living and look like they're still green and doing okay. I keep them in pots, and I'll probably keep them in there until at least early fall. And if they look healthy enough, I'll probably try planting them. A couple of notes about blueberries is you need a couple of different varieties of blueberries for them to cross-pollinate to get better production. If you have all of one type of blueberry, or if you just have a single blueberry plant, it's not going to do as well as if you have other blueberry plants around and other varieties around. And the same goes for apples. We had a little apple tree on the property when we bought it, but I haven't seen it produce any apples last year. It had full of blooms this spring, and hopefully some of the new apple trees that we brought in are going to provide enough cross-pollination to get that thing producing, because it's a nice sized tree and it should be putting out some decent apples, and especially with all the blooms that it's had. Once I get all the projects knocked out that I'm currently working on, I'll probably move on to bringing in some bees, which will also help with all of that. We've got lots of bees around, but I'd like to have some of my own to get the honey production, and also make sure that we've got plenty for pollination. And next, I plowed up a small plot of land, got a fairly level section in our meadow that should make a nice garden. I just have the furrow lines going against the slope. So, you know, obviously if you've got your furrow lines going with the slope, you just basically have drainage ditches. And every time it rains, all your seeds and topsoil is going to go straight to the creek. But hopefully that won't happen. I've seen other people around with gardens on much more sloped property, and flat property in the sun is sort of a unicorn in the mountains, something that you just don't see very often. And the garden, it's near our fire pit, which I used to burn brush, and that's one of those things that I went big with the fire pit. And just thinking it would be nice to have it for a nice big fire pit. I wasn't even thinking about the brush burning, but I've been really, really happy that I made a nice wide pit. I guess it's about 10 to 12 feet wide. Even could have went a little wider if I'd have known that I was going to be using it for burn and brush. And it's nice because it doesn't scar up your land. You've got a nice contained area for safety for one thing, and then also not scarring up your meadows or whatever when you burn brush and doing little piles like that. It's a little easier to control if something does happen to get out of hand. And then I've been taking the ash from the burnt brush and spreading that around in the garden to help increase the potassium. We're really going to try to avoid petrochemicals and commercial fertilizers at all cost. We did fairly well with our little raised bed gardens in Florida. We'd always have years where one crop would do really, really well and other crops that wouldn't do so well, but then the next year everything would be different, with the exception of things like green beans and mustard greens. We never had any kind of a failed crop with either one of those. We always had plenty of mustard greens and plenty of green beans when we were in Florida. So this is a very different environment, so it's going to be a learning process, and we'll see what does well here and what doesn't. And I've got a little Kubota tractor and have an old potato plow that I'm using as a middle buster to break up the ground. And then I looked around for a used disc harrow but couldn't find one. One of the farmers around here told me that everybody sold off all of their old farm machinery for scrap metal back when metal prices were higher. And it's tragic. But that's kind of how people think. And it's one of the reasons that we're so dependent on a failed system to feed us and provide for us, because people just don't even have the implements to do their own farming anymore. But of course, in this part of the country, you do see a lot more larger gardens than you do in Florida. I finally found a good disc harrow online, one that had good reviews, and I got it for about half the price that the local Kubota dealer was selling their lowest priced model disc harrow for. And just got that delivered today. Went out and spent about an hour harrowing over the plowed plot, got it all ready, and should be starting to plant tomorrow morning if the weather permits. It rained a little bit today, so the soil is nice and moist, and it should be a good day for planting. And I went with the disc harrow instead of a 3-point PTO driven tiller for a couple of reasons. For one, a disc is a lot cheaper. But most places in the mountains have fairly rocky soil. We've got lots and lots of rocks on our property. I was expecting that I was going to find a lot more rocks in the plot that I plowed up, but I guess because it's sort of more of a bottom area, it didn't have so many rocks that like we have on the rest of the property. But still, I found a few in there. But big rocks aren't great for a tractor-powered tiller. If you hit a big rock, you can do some really serious damage, and a tiller has lots of moving parts inside. The disc harrow, on the other hand, doesn't have any mechanical parts. Really, the worst you can do is, you know, maybe bend the frame if it's made out of cheap metal, or knock off a disc or something. But they're just kind of a dumb heavy machine, basically sort of a hammer type tool. And the downside is that a disc harrow takes a few more passes to do the same work that a tiller would do in one pass, but it's only a small garden plot and not acres upon acres of commercial production. So it suits my needs really well. The plot's ready to go, and I'm going to start planting tomorrow. Most of the folks around here don't start planting until Mother's Day, because we can still get frost in late April and even early May. But certain vegetables like peas, cabbage, and beets, they can handle a little frost. So I'm going to go ahead and try to get those in now and wait on everything else probably until after Mother's Day and make sure that we're free and clear from frost. one of the things I did to get a head start is I started germinating my seeds in a wet paper towel. I'd done that several times in Florida. One of the things I do is I just put them out on a plate and just keep the towel moist. But you always got to remember to keep it moist, because just being out like that, it dries out. What I did this year, and because I had so many different types of seeds that I was trying to germinate and to save space, is I just put the paper towel with the wet paper towel with the seeds inside a Ziploc baggie. Also, you can label your Ziploc baggie to remind you what seed's in there without having to look. And I started those about a little over a week ago, probably 10 days ago, I'd say. And these seeds are seeds that I bought 2015, so 4 years old now. And this process is also, you know, letting me see which seeds are still viable, because after 4 years, you know, everything's not sprouting. So far, it looks like everything is germinating except the corn and sweet peppers. And I've stored these seeds in the freezer and kept them in their original Mylar pouches. So I expected that they'd all still be good. So this was a learning experience to find out that the peppers and the corns weren't germinating. But because of that, I'd be very skeptical of buying one of those survival seed vaults. If you have some of those, especially if you've had them for more than a couple of years, you might want to do just a few seeds from each pouch in a paper towel, in a Ziploc baggie, just to make sure that your seeds are still viable. Because, I don't know, we kept these in the freezer, like I said, in Mylar pouches, and still the corn and the peppers seem like they're not doing anything. On the other hand, we had green beans, tomatoes, two types. We had beefsteak tomatoes, a couple different types of cherry tomatoes, squash, zucchini, mustard greens, beets. And we've kept all those in the freezer, and they're all sprouting. And they all seem to be germinating at a very high rate, too. So my guess is that they should be good for several more years, as long as we just keep them in the freezer, keep them in the original pouches, and keep doing what we're doing. Lastly, I've learned a lot about stocking a pond in the mountains. Trout, that's pretty much the big rage around here after asking around and doing lots of internet searches. I couldn't find any hatcheries or farms that would sell me anything else. So finally, I took an hour drive to purchase some farm-raised trout to bring and put in my pond. While I was there, I learned that they only sold female fish, and that even if they had male fish, they probably wouldn't breed in a spring-fed pond anyway. So it's not exactly what I was looking for from a prepper standpoint, but one of my main concerns was that the trout would keep the crayfish thinned out. The crawdads, they get into the bank of the pond. My pond is basically it's two underground springs that feed into a little creek, and then that little creek is dammed up on one side, and so that's what's creating the pond. The more holes the crayfish put in there, the faster the pond leaks out, and then at some point you get too many holes, the water's going to leak out faster than the springs can refill it. So I went to get the trout. I had to buy an aerator to keep the container oxygenated. And then I got the trout, raced to get them home. And then even after all of that, half of them were dead when I got home. The next morning, a couple more had died. So not a great experience. So I went back to the drawing board, started really looking for pond stalkers, started doing searches for surrounding counties and surrounding states, and going way out to the east side of this state, and finally found some companies that had a fish wagon, basically a mobile pond stocking wagon, that truck that would go around from town to town, and they would go to feed stores and tractor supply stores. But this company, their truck didn't come anywhere near me. So I kept looking around and seeing if there was anything like that around here, but couldn't find anything like that around online. So I started trying to call around. I called the local tractor supply store. They'd never heard of any such thing. They just, you know, basically I had three heads. You know, they no idea what I was talking about. Finally, I called the little hole in the wall mom and pop store where I buy my grass seed and my straw. And lo and behold, they have a mobile fish truck coming by this month. So I was really, really stoked about that. Very, very happy. Called the company to check the prices. Fishes range from $1.75 each to 43 cents each. Except for the minnows. The minnows, I think they're sold by the pound and they're like really super cheap. And they're basically just fodder for the other fish, you know. And the company recommended that I put in my order so the truck would be sure to have the selection I wanted. So if you've ever done one of these things where you order the Zycon Fresh, where you put in your order and then they have the truck and you go pick up your chicken or your shrimp or your beef or whatever, they have pretty good food and pretty good deals too, the Zycon deals. So it sort of works like that. And ordered a nice selection of bass, bluegill, and red ears, and catfish. And I've got enough to stock my small pond for under $100. And so from what I've been told, the bass should be able to take care of the crawdads. I got a buddy here in town that I spoke with the other day, and he said that he catches bass with a plastic crawdad lure. So evidently that's something that they're attracted to. So hopefully they're going to eat the crawdads and, the red ears and the catfish. Hopefully they're going to help to keep the pond clean. And, the fish truck will be in town in a couple of weeks. Hopefully all goes well. And I'll be teaching my daughter to fish about this time next year. Hopefully we'll have something in there big enough to eat by then. And, for now, she's going to have a really good time feeding the fish, the fish pellets. She loves to throw rocks in the pond right now. So, I can imagine when she's throwing fish pellets in there and they're coming up and eating, she'll just get that much bigger of a kick out of it. So this month, I've got a couple of questions for you guys. And go to PrepperRecon.com. Leave your answer in the comment section of this month's podcast if you've got any answers for my questions. And that's going to give everybody in the community a chance to see your reply. And, you know, maybe somebody can give a little bit of an answer and somebody else can come back and add to it. And it'll give everybody a chance to comment and learn from the experience. And also, if I read your comment on the air, you're going to win a code for a free Audible audiobook. So the first question that I have for you guys is, if you have any experience stocking a new pond, what are some of the things you wish you'd have known when you first started out? So that's something that would be very helpful for me. And there might be some other people out there that are thinking about stocking a pond and would like to know what they should do and what maybe you would have done differently if you were starting from scratch again. And then my second question is, if you live in the Southern Appalachian Mountains and you've got a lot of red clay in your soil, have you discovered any hacks for growing watermelon? Watermelons typically like loamy soil with good drainage, but I'm hoping to find a workaround for that. So love to hear you guys' comments and hopefully you guys can help me out this time. So, and then don't forget to email your questions for next month's show to prepperrecon@gmail.com. And that's it for this month's show. God bless and happy prepping.